landlords are going to have to march in tune or actually in front of the corporate occupier, because if their assets are not relevant to the corporate occupier, ultimately they won't be leased, they won't be filled.
You're listening to Conversations by Cushman and Wakefield. In this four-part series, we're rethinking the office and how this asset class can be optimized for a new era. I'm Amy Kelly. Thanks for joining.
What is happening in the office sector? As hybrid working models and more discerning occupier demands reshape the office, many landlords are rethinking their assets for this new era. To understand more about how and why the office is evolving, I have with me today Dr. Dominic Brown from our research team and Anshul Jain from our Asia Pacific leasing business. Hi, Dom. Hi, Anshul.
G'day. Hello.
I must admit, I'm very excited to have this conversation with you both. Dom, you, of course, are a researcher and love a data point or two. And Anshul, you're very client-facing, so I'm interested to hear how your different perspectives line up on some of these topics today. Or perhaps they won't line up. I guess we'll find out. But let's ease into the series by getting a sense of the most pressing issues within the commercial real estate industry right now. I might start with you, Dom. What would you say is the number one question you are being asked by clients?
Yeah, thanks, Amy, and it's great to be here. So as part of the global research team, I suppose the first thing the clients want to know from us is what is actually going on in the world at the moment. As you referenced right at the start, you know, there's a lot happening within the office sector. And so I like to break it down to fundamentally two areas. There are the cyclical changes and there are the structural changes. Now, to make that simple, cyclical changes are things that occur over a relatively short period of time, such as a business cycle, right, or an economic cycle. And that's one thing that we're looking at right now. Obviously, you know, we've got slowing GDP growth, and we've got high inflation, rising interest rates. These are going to be affecting everyone in the near term. And then underlying that, you've got the structural changes. So these structural changes occur over a much longer period of time. And fundamentally, the office sector is being structurally changed and being structurally challenged. And that comes with the nature of what tenants are looking for, regulatory pressure, all of those factors together. And as you can tell, these are big topics. So they take a long time to come through. And so clients are trying to understand both what's happening in the short term, but how do they need to position themselves for the longer term?
Okay, a lot to unpack there for your first key issue of the day. I guess that sets us up well for just how much we have to cover. Anshul, what would you say is the key issue you're speaking with clients about at the moment?
I think for the industry, for clients and for service providers, this is probably one of the most interesting and exciting times to be in real estate office industry. You know, Dominic spoke about the structural changes, and I'll just kind of maybe dive a little bit deeper into some of those that we are seeing right now. The number one ask, sustainability, right? Every company now has carbon emission or net zero goals. Secondly, it's wellness, which is kind of post-COVID. Third is return to office. Linked to that is what should the office actually be going to be used for. So a lot of clients, most of our clients are actually struggling with determining the course of kind of what the ideal return to office should be and how the office should be used. The fifth is amenities, right? All of that's kind of changing. And then you combine that with the whole sort of macroeconomic factors, the threat of recession, interest rates rising, which means capital is more expensive. If capital is more expensive as an investor, do you really want to go out and buy the building right now? Or are you expecting the value of the building to fall? As an occupier, do you really want to go and put in millions of dollars in the fit out when actually capital is precious, capital is expensive, and they'd rather put it in the mainstream business use? So a lot is changing both on cyclical and structural that Dr. Dom just talked about.
Dom, you authored the recent report, Rethinking the Office, How to Optimize Your Asset for a New Era. And I guess there were many takeaways from the report, but perhaps we should start with office occupancy rates, because as you both just touched on, return to office seems to be one of, if not the biggest drivers of change in the sector. So Anshul, we might start with you this time. What are you seeing and hearing on the ground among occupiers when it comes to getting employees back to the office?
So first of all, Asia is the best off of the three regions. So to that extent, the industry has something to cheer about. Even within Asia, their different markets are operating at different speeds. So, you know, China is near 100%. Singapore is one of the best return to offices in the world. You know, India is at 50 to 60%. Australia is at 50 to 60%. So the averages are a lot better than Europe and US. And then, of course, if you look at within the markets, also the buildings, the type of the buildings and locations are working at a different speed. So if you have a kind of a prime premium building with lots of amenities and people want to come back to it, it's in a good CBD location where people come back not only to work, but socialize with their friends outside of work hours, we are seeing much better return to office. Primarily, the return to office problem still exists with, I would say, US tech firms at large. Having said that, what we are seeing right now is increasingly mandates coming in from those large multinational US tech firms for their people to come back to office at least 3 days a week. Whether these mandates will be successful or not, only time will tell. The other issue that creates then is you've got people coming back 3 days a week. If everybody wants to come back Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and nobody wants to come back other 2 days, how do you optimize the space for that?
So, I mean, that then starts to present some really interesting questions at the market level, because a lot of these companies have been expanding over recent years. Despite all the economic volatility and the uncertainty out there, a lot of companies have actually been expanding. And so this is going to start to really play out on the ground in the next year to 18 months, that as these mandates start to be worked through, as people are back in the office more regularly, companies are actually going to get a really strong idea of how much space they currently need and how much space might they need into the future. And what then happens to vacancy rates? This is where we see a real nuance across the region. And I always tell my clients this, is that headline vacancy only gives you a partial picture of what's going on in the market. What you really need to do is get beneath the hood and look at these submarkets. And you may well find out that areas that you want to be actually do have pretty tight vacancy, even though at the city level, the vacancy level may be quite high.
Another key risk factor for obsolescence that you noted in the report, Dom, was the age of offices. And it struck me looking at the charts that all the mature markets were grouped at one end of the scale and all the emerging markets were grouped at the other. So I guess my question is an older building necessarily at a higher risk of becoming obsolete, or are there other risk factors that play into it?
Age is but one factor. Sure, all other factors being equal, an older building is perhaps more at risk of becoming obsolete. But I think we actually need to look a little bit beyond that. And so it comes down to ownership of the asset. Is it a core asset within a large fund, for example, which will operate in a very different way to perhaps an opportunistic or a value-add asset for a smaller owner? It also comes down to the capital expenditure plans, how much money has been spent on the building. Has the lighting been upgraded? Has the end-of-trip facilities been upgraded? Has the building access been upgraded? When was it last upgraded? So I don't think you can purely say that age by itself is a dictator. It really comes down to the asset itself, the ownership of the asset, and how much money has continued to be devoted to that asset.
Totally with Dr. Dom on that. I think, again, it's slightly different in different markets. But if you look at emerging markets, you know, China, India, most of Southeast Asia, a lot of first-generation buildings came in 2000s. And those buildings, they were constructed very quickly, they were occupied very quickly, and with very less thought on design and long-term sustainability of those buildings. So those buildings are becoming obsolete. There's no question about that, right? But also, in the last 5 years, and I just go just before COVID as well, thoughts around green buildings, around welfare of employees, so lighting, air quality, general amenitization of buildings, these were firmly on table. But there were only a few mature landlords who were designing the building with these factors in mind. And what was really happening was, you know, there were good quality landlords, institutional quality landlords who were already thinking ahead, but there were other landlords who were still putting buildings up in a manner which they used to put up a few years ago, slightly advanced, but not quite all the way thinking about future. Then what we're finding even after COVID years is that institutions have reacted very strongly and have started pumping in a lot of capital to upgrade their buildings for all the factors that the occupiers are looking for, right? So what we'll find over the next few years is there'll be a general imbalance in the market. There'll be some buildings which will be future ready. There'll be some buildings which are designed today, which obviously will be future ready. But there'll be other buildings which could be new buildings, as in constructed in the last 5-7 years, and yet we'll find obsolescence in that.
I'd be interested to know, as the market starts to pick up again, this flight to quality we've seen from occupiers, will they then go back to these 7 to 10-year-old buildings? What will happen?
One thing is the sustainability quotient of the building is going to drive the occupancy really hard. And what the tenants today expect is every large multinational corporate now has target to net zero, right? So suddenly what used to be in the decision-making matrix 5-10% of the weightage has now actually become 20-25% of the weightage. You add to that wellness, right? So it's kind of going to be really hard for people to go back into older buildings which do not satisfy the criteria. And of course, if you completely run out of space, which is a real possibility given all the recruitments and lack of expansion in portfolio, even with hybrid, there's a real chance that most corporates will run out of space. Sometimes you may not have the choice. So short term, people may still fill their space requirement in older buildings. But if you fast forward it 5 to 10 years, you'll find that most corporates have moved into higher quality buildings and there's no compromise there.
Just kind of jumping in on that, there's a few underlying drivers that are around that as well. And I hate to bring up COVID. I think it feels like we've been talking about it forever, but it does feel like that produced a line in the sand with regards to things like the environment, health, wellness, well-being. But then you look at societal change, or more specifically generational change. Now, I'm a demographer by trade, so anything to do with populations and generations, I'm naturally interested in. But you've got two key changes that are going on in the market at the moment. First of all, you've got a very tight job market, and there doesn't seem to be any evidence of that softening, at least not right now. But then you look at the generational composition of it. So you've got Generation Z are the largest generation globally in terms of population size, but Generation Y, or the millennials, are the largest generation within the workforce. And they're now occupying positions within a company that has real decision-making power. And we know from past studies that both of these generations take things like the environment, well-being, mental health incredibly seriously. It's not just lip service. And so they're bringing that entire attitude to the workplace, either in terms of the decisions that they're making, or indeed what they want to see from corporate occupiers, from their potential employer. I think this is only ever going to be forward steps, and landlords are going to have to march in tune, or actually in front of the corporate occupier, because if their assets are not relevant to the corporate occupier, ultimately they won't be leased, they won't be filled.
I think Dr. Dom is absolutely right. You know, as a firm, just in Asia Pacific, we probably recruit over 2,000 people a year. And what we're seeing as number one question that's being asked by prospective candidates is around our firm's commitment towards net zero, commitment towards environment, commitment towards wellness of our people. So clearly that is, if we are not able to answer those questions, if you're not able to genuinely work towards the net zero commitment that the firm has, I think we won't be able to recruit and grow. And effectively, buildings and building occupancy for us and for many firms is a big contributor towards carbon emission. So we as occupiers then expect the same from our landlords, that the buildings that we go in provide that environment. So it's all very linked.
Circling back, it sounds like talent retention and sustainability are two of the biggest drivers of what's actually happening in the office space right now. If we are to project forward from a landlord perspective, what does this mean for owners of secondary and older buildings that just aren't as high spec as occupiers are looking for?
There's a big question mark over secondary,
and it often gets ignored in Asia Pacific because it's such a rapidly expanding region with lots of new supply coming on online. It's often overlooked. So that's sort of number one point to make, that there is secondary stock and quite a considerable amount all across the region. Just because it's secondary, though, doesn't necessarily mean that it is out of favor completely. And one of the things certainly that we've seen in Australia, but arguably it's been going on in other markets as well, is that landlords have actually been positioning their secondary grades or B grade assets, but with A grade services. So it may well be that they can't make it an A grade asset. And that might just be as simple because the floor plates are too small. There's a minimum floor plate requirement in order for it to become an A grade asset. And if you think about the corporate occupier, there's going to be some of the top tier blue chip companies that are going to want the biggest, bestest and shiniest building, but that does also come with the highest price tag. There are going to be other companies that are smaller, domestics, locals, or whatever, that are going to want the best space that they can afford. They're also going to want to see a commitment to sustainability, to health, to wellness, to well-being. So I think it is on the landlord to make sure that they've got an appropriate response that's meeting the market, but perhaps making sure that also they're not overcapitalizing the bill, i.e. spending too much on it.
We've spoken a lot about sustainability and wellness, but I think landlords today will need to partner, and some are already partnering with the tenants to understand what do people who work in the building need, right? And there are a lot of efforts being made on engagement, on community building, on interlinkages with transportation hubs, because parking obviously is a big challenge. Providing parking and having solutions to parking where public transportation is not there. And of course, amenities, integration with the local sort of F&B hubs, integration with other entertainment, allowing people to socialize. So there's all those factors that today an advanced landlord or investors are working with in partnership with their clients or tenants to make an environment which is conducive for people to not only work, but socialize.
We've spent a bit of time covering off the flight to quality and the occupier demands that are driving that. But if we look at this all from a macroeconomic perspective, we know that interest rate hikes over the last 12 months or so are now showing signs of slowing. But it has been a long period of uncertainty. What impact has this had in Asia Pacific specifically?
I think at its most fundamental and simplest, it's made people delay their decision making. They want to have a greater understanding of the macroeconomic environment, of their corporate revenue environment, and then they want a greater understanding of the marketplace and what their workplace strategy requirements are as well. Because deploying capital now is expensive. By spending money now, borrowing money now, is expensive given the inflationary environment. So everyone just becomes that little bit more careful in their decision making. I think that's fundamentally what we're seeing out there in the market right now.
If you're an occupier, most occupiers or most companies expanded very rapidly post the first wave of COVID. So in towards the end of 21 and 22, most people hired very, very aggressively. Now, with the threat of so-called recession, interest rates, everything that Dr. Dom said, there's a slowdown of hiring. There's definitely a slowdown of investment into taking more real estate space. With what has that done? That has softened the market up a little bit, which is a rental market. If you're an investor, you therefore then expect that the capital value should actually come down as well, right? Because the rents are a little soft. Now, that ain't coming down. Because if you are a premium building and a good quality building, everybody is looking at the hiring data. Everybody is seeing that the return to office is picking up. The portfolio sizes haven't really gone up since 2019. In fact, it's kind of gone down. The anticipation is there will be lack of space for most companies as we come out of the interest rate cycle and the threat of recession cycle, right? That could happen in early 24, that could happen in mid 24, but it will happen because recessions are, or slowdowns are, cyclical and therefore short term in nature, right? So capital values are not moving. Rental values have come off a bit. I think it's a great time for occupiers to really look at their strategy of what they want to do with their space requirement over the next 5-10 years and lock in some good rentals in, particularly in premium quality buildings, because the anticipation is as the demand comes back, it'll come back with a force and it'll come back in premium buildings.
I think there are many landlords that would be very happy to hear those words, Anshul.
So if it comes to fruition that the market turns a corner and that occupiers aren't willing to compromise on being in their premium office buildings, what's going to happen to supply and demand?
One thing I'm often telling occupiers and also investors is to fully understand the local market dynamics, because what we often find is that vacancy is considerably tighter in those submarkets where occupiers want to be. There's a reason why everyone's coalescing in a certain area. It's got good quality buildings, good transport, good local amenity. And so there is the potential that if everyone then has that decision-making process that we want to be in these high quality locations, you could find that there could be quite a squeeze, because we are seeing quite tight vacancy, and by quite tight, definitely into the single digits for high quality assets in high quality location.
And so I suppose the consequence for investors and office owners then is to upgrade their buildings so it becomes one of these premium office spaces. Is that the solution to the problem?
Well, it's definitely one of the solutions, but I think markets always come to an equilibrium in the long run, right? So you'll have an oversupply issue, you'll have an over-demand issue, right? So at the moment, it's kind of slightly more imbalanced where this, as Dr. Dom said, supply of good quality space in relevant micro markets, the demand could outstrip that supply. But you then see investments coming back in and people pushing to build. So I'm not quite concerned in the long run, but definitely in the next kind of 3 or 4 years, we'll find a tighter market for good quality space.
It's one of those great conundrums in that peak demand and peak supply never match at the end of the day, in that developers want to see an element of demand. But at the same time, building these office buildings does have quite a lead time. It's not they're going to be knocked out of the ground in 6 months. That's where real estate from a demand and supply point of view becomes more of an art than a science. And that's always a judgment call on the level of risk that you're willing to take.
Time to lay your cards on the table. If we look ahead, let's say 5-10 years, let's say 10, what do you see the office stock out there looking like? Any predictions for how it might have changed from what we see today?
You know, I heard this quote a few years ago, and it probably did not make that much sense then as it is making today. It said, psychologists and sociologists should be designing the buildings of the future. Now, architects are going to kill me for this, but fundamentally, the questions are being raised as to how the office is going to be used, right? So if I fast forward this 5-10 years later, or maybe even sooner, it all goes down to the purpose of office. And when we say purpose of office, I think two very important components is going to be, apart from the office building, which we are all used to, is going to be the home office and the integration of home office into the traditional workspace. And second is flex offices. And these flex offices managed by third-party operators could be closer to your home, could be more dispersed gives people an option to come into the space, or could even be in the main buildings where the corporate is housed to allow them to flex up or flex down. And of course, everything else that we spoke about around the quality of buildings, the wellness, the sustainability. And when we say purpose of office, I think two very important components is going to be, apart from the office building, which we are all used to, is going to be the home office and the integration of home office into the traditional workspace. I guess I'm capturing three things there.
Dom, what does your crystal ball say?
First off, our office market locations across much of the region are going to be bigger than they are now. There's a view that from our third-party data providers that there's going to be 15 million more office jobs across the Asia-Pacific region by the end of this decade. That means more space is going to be required. So our office markets will be growing. Not all of them. They all won't be growing at the same pace, but they will be growing. I think get prepared for bigger cities, bigger office locations.
That's 1.5 billion feet we're talking about. 1.5 billion feet.
So 1.5 with another eight zeros on the back on the end of it, which is a lot of space. I can see a situation where office buildings start with the technology-led solution. Technology is a way to bring about change, and it's a way to measure change. So if you want to have a more sustainable building, a technological solution is a way to bring about that greater level of sustainability. It's a way to measure the sustainability. It feeds into how people work, where they work, when they work, that blending of the office environment and the home environment through hybrid working, which then brings in diversity, equity, and inclusion in the way that you work and how you work, no matter where you choose to work. And what that greater focus on well-being, health, all of those kind of things, sustainability, technology will be the driver of that and the measurer of that, of the impacts that we're having.
Totally second what Dr. Dom has said. I remain very excited about the office industry in Asia. I think fundamentally people do want to come back to office. There would be fluidity of that use from home office to flex office close to your home to your traditional offices. The traditional offices itself is changing. So I think for professionals who are coming in, it's one of the most exciting times to be in the industry. You know, new strategies if you're an investor, or new strategies if you're an occupier. It's a fantastic time.
Anshul, Dom, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks, Amy.
You've been listening to Conversations by Cushman and Wakefield. With me today was our Head of International Research, Dr. Dominic Brown, and Anshul Jain, Managing Director of Singapore and Southeast Asia, and our Head of Tenant Representation for Asia Pacific. You can find a link to the Rethinkly Office Sector Report in the show notes. Thanks to Maxwell Love and Brad Bourne for producing this episode. See you next time.